Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. And this is an adventure race episode. I don't want to say an important one because they're kind of all important or not important, but to listen to this one with Rootstock about the trials and tribulations leading up to nationals themselves and how they got through it might be good listening, especially if you're newish to the sport. You're in that competitive-ish class. It's quite interesting to see what can happen to some of the best and how you get through it and learn that you can get through it. So, yeah, listen to this one. They're good people. So, that's it. I don't have anything else to say. So, remember, slow is fast. Fast is good. Have fun. Take a few chances. Be safe. Enjoy yourself. And thanks for listening. So, we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing well.
Great.
Yeah. All three teammates at exactly 6:30.
We're good.
We're nothing if not punctual.
We may not be good in the race. We may not live up to your expectations, but we can make a Zoom meeting on time.
Well, that's good because I don't sometimes. I was supposed to have one last night. And I was outside taking pictures of the 500-mile bike race instead.
Man, yeah, I saw some pictures of that. What kind of race was that?
It's a grand tour. It's the Black Hills Expedition, 540-mile loop. And it conveniently goes 40 yards from the house, front door of the house. So,
seems like
all fellas.
How you doing, Brian?
Ryan.
Hi, Abby. Hey, Randy.
Hey.
Seems like all the good races come through your backyard.
Well, they do. So the Centennial Trail, which is 110 miles, a single track through the Black Hills, is 40 feet out the front door. So. Yeah, they all do. I've literally shot mountain bike races from my bed.
It's a shame you don't bike anymore.
Hey, it's good for me and Chili, so
sure.
We like it. It's good. And I tell people that's not even the best trail around here, so yeah,
Is that one a closely guarded secret?
No, the Centennial is a big deal.
The best trail.
Yeah.
Closely guarded secret.
Yeah, the best trails are where nobody goes, except me and Paulette and Chili. So, there's actually some motorized trails that are really, really, really cool because they get up on the ridges more than the mountain bike trails do. So, They also tend to be a little more straight up climbing, but once you get up there, you're cool. So. I was out, my other project is staining the deck and I'm out washing it tonight. And I'm like, oh God, what time is it? And it was only 5:30.
So, I have to work for another hour.
Yeah. Brian's ready for bed. So.
Yeah. So we'll get this show on the road.
I'm missing Survivor actually.
Oh, is that what
the wife.
Looks like you're ready to fall asleep to me.
Yeah, that too, but I'd be able to get through another half an hour Survivor, but we're recording and I'll watch it tomorrow night.
Oh, I didn't even know that show was still on.
Just started tonight is another episode, another series.
Wow. Wow. It should be another episode or a series of Eco Challenge, right?
Yeah. I'd rather that.
You have any news for us on that one?
No.
Yeah.
Only news I know is that the spammers keep going to the Eco Challenge base camp, so it's like
selling their mugs.
Yeah, mugs and t-shirts.
Yeah.
You know what we should all do? We should get like 500 people to order t-shirts and then cancel the order. Okay, who are you guys? We'll make this official.
Yeah, we are Team Rootstock Racing, Abby Perkis, Brent Friedland, and Brian Rice. We had two teams racing at Nationals, so we were one of the two Rootstock teams there.
Cool. And I guess I should say thank you for taking time. You got a big race coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, the next couple of weeks are a little frantic.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I've actually got a pile of flags and flagging and things that I'm working on sitting next to me, which I will return to when we're done. So,
yeah. Is the house always full of stuff, or do you ever have a normal looking house?
It's gotten better over the last year. We renovated our standalone garage and basically secured it and turned it into a storage unit. And we were able to move most of our rootstock race directing equipment out there and a lot of our racing kit as well. And it's made a world of difference in the house. But before that, we had stuff all the time. And we definitely still have our fair share that sneaks into the corners. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, yeah. The TA sheets and passports from the Two Rivers, which was Memorial Day weekend, are still sitting at my feet right now.
Well, I guess I don't have any maps or anything, but I'm getting ready to go shoot, I don't know, in a few weeks. So there's camera stuff all over the house because Paulette's not home. So I can just lay stuff out wherever I want right now. So. Otherwise, it'd be her maps. She always has maps. Even if she doesn't have anything planned, she has maps out. So.
The dog doesn't.
How about you, Brian?
I don't leave anything I don't leave anything lay around. I have a Great Dane who eats everything. So anything laying around, forget it.
Yeah. Well, and you can see behind you the organization somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah, I try. The basement is my man cave that I hang everything up and somewhat organized.
So how, if you needed something that you haven't used in like a year and a half, how long would it take you to find it?
It would take me 10 seconds. I know where everything is. And once I don't use something or feel like I don't need it anymore, I get rid of it before it just sits there and collects dust. But my rule is I have to use everything in the basement once a year. Once a year it comes down and I use it or else I don't need it any longer.
Yeah, that's a good rule. I wouldn't work here because we have 30-year-old bikes hanging in the attic. Yeah. Someday maybe. Nationals wasn't exactly what you planned, but what's your take of it now that you've had a little time to reflect, and then we'll go back at it.
Yeah. Well, we're probably the first group. I mean, how many episodes have you done now, Randy? 250 or so? 300?
You will be 301.
Oh, good.
Wait, who's number 300 going to be?
Well, who is number 100 and who is number 200?
Is Kyle interviewing you again?
No, Jared Hart.
Oh, cool.
J-Rod. So
awesome.
See, well, I owed him a podcast from your guys' race a year ago.
Okay.
So,
well, so I guess there's all sorts of special honors there. Mm-hmm. But we probably are the first group you've invited in because of how poorly we did, considering that you picked us to win the race. So I would start off by saying that there's clearly an SI cover jinx in play here. For future teams, don't let Randy Erickson pick you to win nationals because the wheels will come.
I like that.
Yeah. But the race did not go at all according to plan. And, that was obviously true for us in the results, though, for the record, we did, I think, collectively, as many people did, think that Wadali would win the race as they did. And, there were several other teams that I probably would have identified as teams to beat as well. But we were definitely hoping to do better. But the bigger issue was just, we always like to go into a race and walk away feeling like we did everything we could. Our team has always thrived off of teamwork and we all know that there's no such thing as a perfect adventure race, but we often do walk away from races feeling like we had a easy race. That doesn't mean obviously that it doesn't hurt or that we don't have our issues, but Things usually are pretty smooth for us as a team, and this was a very uncharacteristic event for us. So
you mean in terms of dynamics and
our ability
to work together?
Yeah. You know, in terms of dynamics, in terms of our, you know, I don't even know if it was that we weren't working as a team together, but like we really were struggling to get in sync. And, you know, we usually tend to nail strategy and, you know, have things go pretty smoothly out there. And that helps make up for some of the lack of speed we have compared to some of the other top teams. But nothing seemed to work very well, except when we were in boats, that worked well. But
so it wasn't even the perfect worst race, because you actually had some good parts. Well, you know, that bragging rights, if you had the worst race ever, maybe that's something. There's a lot to unpack there. Where do we start? So how much did your ankle injury figure into it going into it? And do you think that maybe just kind of threw you off?
Yeah, it's a great question. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think it was a huge factor, but I was not myself on foot. I think my strength is always foot sections, and between normally being pretty spot on with navigation, but then also I tend to, I think, push the team, in terms of our pace and how we're racing. And we were never able to get into a groove that I would normally have set for us. I don't know if that made a huge difference, but it definitely, mentally, it absolutely changed the complexion of the race for me. It was actually the mountain biking loop, section D of the opening Cloverleaf, the more technical loop that we did, where I had the most trouble. I was just, was really nervous about coming down wrong. The ankle was bad enough that like, I really was, every step was painful and everyone was kind of tenuous. So, you know how things are on a mountain bike, Randy. You go over a rock, you hit it just the right way. You have to put your foot down unexpectedly, you land on a log, whatever it might be, not to mention falling. So I just got kind of out of my rhythm, and that actually helped set off a little cascade of things that just, I think, derailed a lot of the race for us overnight.
So Abby and Brian, did you guys notice that or pick up on it, or what, were you aware of it?
You want to go first, Brian?
Be honest, be honest.
Yeah. I mean, usually Brent is right up there, you know, on the single track. And then we kind of did a team decision to have me go first and kind of lead the way. And if there was any kind of obstacles, I'd yell back to Brent, let him know what was going on. But it seemed like any kind of log or kind of rock, he was real tentative, got off his bike, and it kind of escalated and slowed things down, and couldn't get in the groove. And then Abby was behind him, which then led her into stopping, and then led into, I'll let Abby take over from now at this point. But what happened following Brent, Abby?
Yeah, just to back up, Brent and I coach cross country, and it was it the first day of preseason?
Yeah.
And the girls are out on the course, and Brent, there was literally like a 10 meter stretch of woods that he tried to cut through, like off trail. And I was up the trail, and I see him like hobble at like barely even hobble, like almost crawl out of the woods. And I, wonderful wife that I am, my first thought was, well, there goes nationals. So I think like we had kind of a team heart to heart before going in, that we knew the ankle might be an issue. And we decided that we all really like racing with each other. We trust Brent immensely as a navigator and as a kind of a map master. And we wanted to race as a threesome regardless of the ankle. So I think we were all prepared going in that the ankle might cause some issues. So I don't think that unto itself derailed the team in any way. The first time we stepped off trail, you could see both like physically, but also Brent, I think you said something to the effect of, oh, there's the ankle, like just an awareness that it was there. So I think it was present, but also not an unknown going in.
Yeah.
The problem that Brian alluded to and Brent also did was that I was riding behind Brent. I have been the person who struggles on mountain bike, and it's always that like, it feels like a stressor to worry about being left behind. And so I wanted to make sure that didn't happen. And there were probably moments when I was riding a little bit too close to kind of give him the space to get off and do things. And we were kind of coming around a curve, and there was a big rock, and Brent got off, and I saw him get off, and I was like, well, I'll try to ride it. But I had just lost a bunch of speed. I was dumb. I should have just gotten off, but instead I stayed on and kind of fell, I don't know, 5 feet down a trail into a downed tree, banged up my arm pretty well. And, I, after the race ended up, like the right side of my body was all pretty bruised. None of it hurt very much, but I think it shook my confidence. And I think I may have also had like kind of an adrenaline response to it. So that, an hour later, I just kind of crashed mentally from it. But I was also shaky on the trails after that.
Well, and you damaged one of your cleats, which you didn't really, I don't know if you said it out loud right away, but I felt like you didn't bring it up for an hour or so.
Yeah, I couldn't get into my pedal. And then if I got in, I couldn't get out. We probably should have looked at it in the moment, but instead I let it go. And then at one point I stopped, and Brian was like, I'm stuck. Like, I literally can't get out. So Brian came over, and he just like wrenched my foot. Like, it's still swollen.
Brent was in front of us pretty good, and he heard her scream. I shouldn't have twisted her ankle in that fashion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, you were just following my orders. Abby called out and said, hey, Brian, why don't you go back and sprain her ankle so we're even. Maybe it'll change our fortunes. Yeah. I don't think it helped, though.
Abby's crash was a little bit better than how she's making it out to be, though. She was down on a hillside pretty far off the trail, and her bike was tangled up in her, and she just missed this other tree that was protruding up that she could have been impaled at that point. So the fall, it was a good fall, but she got up like a champ, or I helped her get up, but it was a little bit more than her just falling off the trail.
I was on that trail, and it looks to me like every place on that trail, you're basically on the side hill, and it was a black diamond. No, I didn't see anybody being smooth anywhere. So that's the kind of trail we're talking about. Not some nice flowy single track.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Contrary to what Paula told us, she said later in the race, we would encounter some smooth single track. Or like after the beginning of the section.
Yeah.
And I don't think we encountered any smooth single track till the second morning.
Yeah, it was late in the race that we actually saw stuff that was more pleasant to ride overall.
Just makes me think that Paula is a remarkable mountain biker. And so some of that felt smooth and flowy to
her. Well, there is that fact, right? Of when you're a local thing and you've done that trail 50 times, like you forget at how bad it is or what it really is. So there's that part. Yeah. So you're basically out of sorts. Did you do the bike second, or how did you start the race with Cloverleaf? I know you started the paddle.
We started on the paddle, and we were with the other Rootstock team, which I'll mention a little bit more about that in a second. And then the two Bend teams. And we were leading the pack and the entire time, just kind of waiting for, in particular, the Bend teams to pass us, because they're such quality paddlers. Our two Rootstock teams went into the race like really intentionally not planning on racing together, like line up on the other side on either end of the start line, not racing together. But as a number of folks, I'm sure by the time this airs, have talked about in terms of the format of the race, you could choose how you started the race. And we just both happened to choose to start on the paddle. So we're kind of yelling at each other on the course, like, stay away, stay away. And we got, I don't know, two-thirds of the way through that paddle, three-quarters, and we realized that our boat was really pulling left and felt like no matter what we did, the boat just kept pulling left. So that was kind of the beginning of, I think at least the beginning of us mentally feeling like things were not as smooth as they seem. Like typically, I think we would troubleshoot that and just move on, but it lingered a little bit, the physical part of it, but also just us like focusing on it. And from there, we did the small orienteering loop that was kind of right out of the start finish, which.
Yeah, it didn't go well. Yeah. That's where, yeah, things really, I think, started unraveling on us. You know, I had heard so much in the months leading up to the race about how hard the nav is up in Wisconsin and, you know, how hard Paula's races are. And, you know, I took a quick look at some topo maps and said, yeah, indeed, I haven't really seen land quite like that. We actually found a spot in northern New York that is not the same, but looked like it would be some halfway decent terrain to practice in. And that went pretty smoothly, but yeah, the race did not. It also didn't help that I made the rookie mistake of totally botching the scales of the maps. It was just, it was a comedy of errors. You made a comment earlier, Randy, about kind of like worse races. People have had worse races than we have, right? Like, you know,
people may have had worse races at Nationals.
Yeah, serious injuries, serious bike mechanicals, serious illness, really serious, disastrous nav mistakes. We didn't have any of those issues. We just had, it just felt like an endless barrage of little issues that kept compounding and kept compounding, you know, and you get to 20 hours of that and you're like, I just want to be done with this. Right. So that was more the issue, but yeah, you know, I threw away probably 45 minutes on the A loop and, that was a pretty big, that was a secondary mental blow after kind of fighting against the wind and some water in the boat and such on the paddle. But,
we did some singing after that one. We regrouped.
Yeah. We still could have course corrected at that point. You know, the nav issues I made, they added up. There are probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours of them over the course of the race. And I would love to have them back, but, you know, I still think we had a chance to clear the course with those issues. It was everything else that undid us.
Yeah.
So it's that death by a thousand cuts, really. Yep. Right.
Yep.
Nothing major. Nope. But yeah, just goes on. So for me personally, I'm curious how the that trek on E, the bike trek with the magnetic anomalies. What was that like for you guys? No problems or?
That was pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brent picked up on it right away when we were in that area and we kind of just used some trees and kept in the same direction and we got through that pretty unscathed. Yep.
Yeah.
It was a good track section.
Yeah, that
not for me.
Well, and I know it was tough in a lot of ways. You know, the magnetic anomaly was an issue. I know a lot of people went for, I don't remember the numberings, but the checkpoint that was on the kind of knoll right near the TA. I know a lot of people went for that one first. I think it was E1, I think. I know a lot of people struggled with that one. We did it the opposite direction. So we hit that last and it took us an extra, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes to find that one. There were a lot of knolls up there, but we found it pretty straightforward. But you know, it was funny. I chose really to start with the A loop. You know, I looked at the maps quickly in that mad scramble before the race.
Yeah.
And my logic was there were a lot of trails on the map in that A loop and not so much in the E loop. So I was thinking, okay, I know how hard this nav is going to be. Let's start, quote, easy, right? Like, let's start with looks like the easier loop. I will say, even then, I remember looking at the E-map quickly and saying, well, it doesn't actually look that difficult, the navigation out there. So in retrospect, we would have been much better off starting with E for the sake of easing into the navigation and the terrain. But, you know, bad decision.
why did you pick the paddle first? That curiosity.
Just typically the wind. The wind usually is more calm during the mornings. And since there were two, the biggest paddle, we decided to do the biggest paddle so we could get that out of the way and hopefully the calmest weather.
Yeah,
that was the main reason.
So Brian's also just coming off of a, what was it, 250-mile-ish?
280 miles pack rafting the Grand Canyon in 11 days we did it. So I was feeling pretty strong paddling, but I wasn't on my bike or I haven't been running in the last, you know, month or so. So I was like, let's paddle. I'm okay there. We'll see what happens.
You gotta start someplace. Did you guys like that start?
Are you referencing like the clover leaf?
The choice. Approach? Yeah. Everybody doing.
I did. I absolutely appreciate why some teams didn't, in terms of, you know, it obviously makes following the race much harder for spectators. Internally, you really don't have any sense of what's going on for half the race in terms of where, I'll say that, like, from a competitive standpoint, I don't necessarily disagree with those. The thing I love about it, and the reason I will always embrace that kind of race with open arms, is you get to see people in a way that you don't in a more linear event. And the thing I really like about that is we always talk about how one of the great things about our sport is people at all levels get to interact with each other, right? And, you know, we had racers at nationals that had never done an adventure race at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have, you know, teams like, you know, ours or Wadali or some others that have, you know, 5-6 national championships between them. You don't see that in other sports, but, you know, so I think we pride ourselves in that, but oftentimes the start gun goes off and those teams never see each other again during the event. This was awesome, right? Like, we were seeing people, not just for the clover leaf, but, you know, because of the nature of that clover leaf, a lot of the short course or mid, you know, mid pack teams, they were getting ahead of us off the clover leaf. And so we would kind of see them throughout the night as well, which was, I loved that. It's a different kind of competition, but that to me highlights the best of our sport. So I'll take that every time.
Yeah. We got the second morning when we were out on the big orienteering loop, we popped out of the woods and we saw our friends on Fragile Flowers who, ironically, actually the team I raced on, in 2019 nationals, I was just a few months postpartum. And so we had two rootstock teams and I raced on, the second one and we were mostly out just to have a good time. But we ended up finishing the race with Fragile Flowers there too, but it's such a rare treat to run into those guys in the woods. You know, typically, as Brent said, on the more linear courses, we don't necessarily get to spend time with them. And we got so much energy from seeing our friends kind of across the sport. I hope we are able to give some of that energy back to them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, might as well give it to them. You're not using it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We don't need it.
So let's make this a positive question, but when was the low point and how did you get out of it? And where was the high point? See, I said it real fast. That makes it better.
Well, I can think of low points. We got to the orienteering loop and I pulled the guys aside and said, and this was something that had been kind of weighing on me over the previous several hours, that like in a different race, if we had been kind of focused and moving and like regardless of the competition piece, if we had just been having like our race, I don't know that it would have weighed on me to the same extent, but I had driven out to Wisconsin, so 18 hours, and we had an 18-hour drive home that we were starting right after the race or right after the banquet, and had to be home by Sunday night for work and kid obligations. And I was like, guys, I don't feel like we can drive home safely given how tired we're going to be. So I think maybe we should stop racing and go take a nap and then get in the car and start driving. This was at like 4 o'clock in the morning. Which was like not, you know, not my finest moment in a race. Yeah. And I really am grateful for Brent and for Brian for saying like, no, you know what? Like, we came here because we committed to this together and like, forget what the race is that we're having. Like, let's finish this together and let's finish it and find something that we can be proud of out of it. And we'll worry about the ride home when we get there. And like, we'll do what we can and we'll make sure we get home safely. And like, I respect that you're stressed out about that. Like they heard that and they acknowledged it and also were able to kind of like pull me out of that, which I appreciated. Yeah. So that was one of my points. I don't know about you guys. you can't see Brent on audio.
Yeah.
But he's nodding.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the culmination of just a really like prolonged, long, low period for us, you know? And I think, as we said earlier, like we just like, we have smooth races, even when things aren't easy. Like we tend to have pretty smooth races. And like, you know, we correct easily from mistakes. Mistakes are kind of very small blips on the radar and don't tend to have lasting impact. And, you know, starting, I think around, I don't know, it's probably like 9 PM or so when we got into that mountain bike loop. And I mean, again, we had plenty of issues before that too, on the foot section, but it was really, I think 9 PM, we were ahead of Bones and we were ahead of Emily's team. Who were they racing as?
Carta.
Yeah. So we were in a perfectly good position to, you know, kind of get ourselves back into the race, despite the issues we'd already had, which were plenty. So we were feeling good about that. And then we got into that mountain bike loop and, you know, I started feeling off kilter and just kind of mentally struggled with that. And then Abby had her crash. And so from really 9 o'clock until about 4, we just were in a prolonged funk, which is just not how we race.
Yeah.
And I think it took a toll on all of us, you know, and I think so when Abby kind of, you know, broached the subject, it was, that was a difficult moment that we're not normally confronted with, to say the least, trying to be diplomatic here.
Well, I mean, in the long run, isn't that going to make it better? Because you know, you reach this low and you figured a way to get out of it. So you should be able next time, if you start to see that spiral, I mean, that's never happened to you before, right? So
in a long time.
Yeah. So, not in a long time.
So I don't know. Silver lining.
Yeah. I mean, we hope that it was a, you know, just this like bizarre constellation and convergence of kind of all sorts of factors that all played together into one race, and all of them relatively challenging, you know, and I think all three of us came to the race, frankly, with some, you know, I think, how do I want to say it? Like psychological baggage, if you will. Right. So we didn't start the race in the mental space we needed to be to race the way we normally do, but certainly not the way we normally do. And to, you know, compete in a race like that, and have a great shot to pull off what our goals were. So,
and physical baggage, you with the ankle, and Brian, you're just like general fatigue, right? From coming off the ground. And I actually was dealing with a Lyme over the summer a little bit, and finished a course of doxy a few days before the race and didn't feel quite right during the race. I actually just had some more blood work done yesterday to see. So I think physical and mental, like none of us were quite in form.
Yeah. So were you really bummed when you crossed the finish line, or were you happy to be finished, or happy that you got through it? What was it like?
Brian, how'd you feel?
Well, we came through at like hour 29 and maybe 33 minutes, and most races most races we usually finish a lot sooner than that. So this race, I feel we got our money's worth. You know, we utilized the time, and we stayed on the course as long as possible, collecting as many points, because at one point I was thinking to myself, I'm like, we're riding back to the finish line, or we're catching a car ride back to the finish line, and we're not even going to be official finishers. So since we finished and we don't have a DNF, I definitely am thankful for the team for pulling through and continuing on and getting over the finish line for sure. Yeah, no, I was thankful. It was a good feeling to have that many battles along that 29 hours and then finishing for sure. It was good.
There was such great energy at the finish line too. Like the whole Nationals, you know, support team was there. And so many, the nice thing about Lakewood's, right? So many other teams were there and cheering everybody in, and you couldn't help but feel like even if the race circled back on itself a ton and, you know, it wasn't that kind of point to point linear race, you couldn't help but feel like you had just kind of accomplished a journey.
This is a little more general question, and it's, you guys are probably not the right people to ask about it, but do you think the USARA put on a good race for the new USARA put on a good race?
Brian?
Maybe Brian, you should answer that.
I think it was great. I think the decision-making, that we were able to decide on what to do first and whatever else we wanted to do following that. The Clover design was great. I think adventure races with more decisions and is just the best race. I reached out to 180 afterward and told them that they put on a great race course. For us to struggle like that, it was pretty cool for us to struggle like that. So if there were any other newer teams that were there and struggled and kind of had a bad feeling about AR, I don't think they should, because I do think that that race was on the more difficult side of the adventure racing in general, especially for a 30 hour, but it was definitely a tough Nationals race. It was great. It was put on well. Everything was spelled out exactly how it should have been. And we just made some wrong decisions and weren't feeling very good the whole time, but it had nothing to do with the race design. It was a great race.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I think that, you know, for the sake of transparency, right? You know, Abby and I, as some people know, are part of the new group running USARA as part of the working board. But, you know, when we took over the organization, we knew, and we're a group of racers, right? It's the two of us. It's Kate and Cliff from Strong Machine, Mark Latanzi, who didn't race this year, but, you know, has raced probably more than, you know, just about every other American that's still active, you know, and obviously Mike Garrison, who is leading the show, but, you know, the five of us on the board all intend to keep racing and want to keep racing, and want to keep racing at Nationals. And, you know, so we set up a kind of parallel group that would work with Mike to kind of do all of the Nationals operations, you know. So, you know, the USARA board had very little to do with this event outside of like a few budgetary discussions.
COVID safety, that kind of stuff.
COVID protocols, like some media questions, but like, you know, we had absolutely nothing to do with the race. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, taking off the USARA hat, you know, I know we're going to be doing a deep review. We actually started last night. You know, we have basically weekly board meetings and, you know, talk all night once a week. And, you know, we already kind of dove into that and we have a lot of great feedback to work with. And I think the feedback we've gotten was all stuff we all recognized, you know, whether it was, you know, Mike and Steph kind of working internally and Paula working internally on the race, or, you know, Kate, Cliff, Abby and I racing it, right? And kind of seeing it from that side of it. I think we all kind of saw the exact same thing for the most part. So I think there's fine tuning we absolutely want to do. You know, I think we absolutely think that there's a really important discussion to have about like the flavor of USARA Nationals going forward.
In terms of course layout and format.
Yeah. In terms of kind of course layout, course format, right? You know, Randy, I don't know that was this your first Nationals that you
attended? My first Nationals, yep.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I waited for the new regime.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, historically, one of the great things about Nationals is they always have, you know, a very different flavor in that it really is the local race director and how they direct races. And it's interesting to me hearing some people talk about how USARA Nationals is always X, because I've done, I think, 13 of the last 14 of them. And I would argue actually quite the opposite, that they have been very different in nature. There are some things that tend to be maybe a little bit more commonplace, right? They're not the most linear courses. They're a little bit more Rogaine-y or modified Rogaine-y. You know, but they have a lot of local flavor. So I think we're definitely going to talk a lot about you know, how much of that local flavor do we really keep emphasizing? And how much does USARA start to try to maybe standardize parts of the event? You know, so I think there's a lot of great conversations that we're going to be having thanks to the feedback we've gotten.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Now we're going to drill down to a very, very specific question for Brent. This might not be an easy answer. How much better do you think the race would have been if you would have not started like you talked about in your blog?
Yeah. I think the race would have gone very differently. I think, you know, as we said a little while ago, I think some of our issues stem from the fact that we probably came to the race.
Do you want to just explain what you meant by that?
Yeah, I will. Yeah. But less mentally engaged. So that's something that probably wouldn't have totally changed. But I think that if things had gone smoother, I think we would have been able to overcome those kind of mental demons much more easily than we did, right? Yeah. So yeah, what I referenced in my race report for folks that haven't read it is Abby and I drove home. As she said, we started on Saturday afternoon after the banquet, made it a few hours, slept for 5 or 6 hours in a hotel, and then drove the rest of the way back to, you know, Philadelphia on Sunday. And I think it was like hour 17 of the drive on Sunday, and we're dissecting the race for the 18th time.
47th time.
And I was just like, why didn't we just not start the race on time? You know, like it was very clear that we were not able to process the race quite as fully as we would normally or would have liked to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course there's always that frantic rush to the start line when you're not given much time with the maps and you're trying to do all of that and go to the bathroom a final time and eat a final bite of breakfast and such. And, it was very clear there wasn't enough time to do all that, but we never really seriously talked about that as an option. And in retrospect, it's like, I think if at 7:45, instead of like trying to pack up quickly and do the last bathroom run and get to the finish line all in like 10 to 15 minutes, if we had just sat in the tent
it did feel like a finish line by that point.
Yeah, finish line. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Whatever. If we had just taken those 15 minutes, like that might've been all we would have needed. And maybe another, even if we took another 5 or 10 after people ran off, let them run off. And I think it would have been a game changing decision for us. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting point.
Yeah.
Paula said something really interesting in a conversation. She was on Brian Gaten's Dark Zone podcast recently. And she said that many teams kind of process the first half of the race and then they finish the cloverleaf or got to the orienteering section and then process the second half of the race. Yeah. And we didn't take that approach. And I wonder if the teams that did that just said like, we're not even going to look at the later maps. We're just going to figure this out. If we might have had a different experience. I hadn't thought about it at all until I heard her say that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there was intention behind that on her part. Like if she wanted teams to have to process on course as well.
Interesting.
Though even then we, you know, we went through the maps and I'd say 75% give or take of the energy we spent or that I spent really looking at maps was on the cloverleaf. I did like look through the rest of it just to make sure that I understood like how the maps fit together. You know, and those kinds of questions, but even then, I do feel like we spent most of our energy on the cloverleaf. It's just, we made decisions that seemed rational. And in some ways they were, like Brian said, you know, we wanted to paddle first. That's a logical thing to do, right? Wind tends to pick up later in the day more often than not. That's a logical decision. Leaving the mountain bike to last did make some sense.
Because you had to finish leg E before dark. Initially, we actually thought you had to finish the cloverleaf before dark. And then at some point on the first paddle realized that, no, you just had to finish that leg before dark. So we had planned to do those two in reverse. We had planned to do the mountain bike in the middle and leg E at the end. And then we flipped those. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on the mountain bike, like there wasn't any real navigation or any significant navigation. You know, so it was kind of like that. That was one where maybe we could get away with doing that in the dark. And you know, it made sense to start with leg A in my head, right? Start with small foot section before the big one. But at the same time, we talked about some of these things. We talked about, should we mountain bike at night? Should we? I thought in my head, maybe I should do E first because it looks like it's actually easier topography to navigate. But I think with another 10 minutes to really talk about those different options, we would have done the Cloverleaf in a totally different order.
Interesting. I don't want to say in a normal race, but normally would you think that is your strength if you only have an hour to look at the maps?
Yeah, I think so.
I think Abby and Brent really work well with Abby reading the clues and the course directions, and then Brent kind of processing and putting it down on map and looking at our route choice and such. And then me kind of leaning over and maybe seeing something that Brent doesn't see. But I do think that that's one of our strengths. And then Brent and Abby, Brent usually picks up some kind of strategic decision along the way. And he sees something that maybe some of the other teams don't. And that kind of sometimes helps us out with he also likes to do some risk decisions. And definitely he's looking for a place to swim as well. He's looking for that swamp or that pond to swim across. But
and we got that in Wyoming too. Wyoming, Wisconsin.
So I do think it is one of our strengths to kind of look at things and quickly make some decisions. And that usually is a favor to our team.
Yeah. Well, maybe Brent wasn't just not quite sexy enough looking at the maps.
I tried. I had it unzipped. Yep.
Yeah. Randy, we spent 20 minutes of our board meeting last night analyzing Brent's wardrobe choices during summer races.
There was once a day. I'm tired, right? We just started. Brain's not working. I don't know. Once upon a time, when we used to race as goals, I not only would commonly unzip the bike jersey, but I also had one that was sleeveless. I looked
got the guns out
in that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the secret. Can we talk about something that I want to know that's a little bit, I want to say happier, but a little more upbeat? Tell me about your shortcut at the Maine Summer Adventure and how you put 90 minutes on everybody else in the world on that stage. The pack graph.
Yeah. I mean, we had a great race in that race. I mean, that was like how things, to the earlier point, that's how races normally go for us, right? Like things are smooth. The interesting thing is like,
that's how races normally go and that they're like smooth and we make good decisions, like regardless of the competition.
It's not about the fact that we came
out on top.
That's what I mean. And, to Brian's point earlier, one of the things that I think, I know a lot of people have talked about that pack raft section where we made up all that time. The interesting thing is for us, we felt like we were having a better race by that point than I think it seemed we were having, because we basically were in a three-way tie at the start of that section. We had fallen behind by, I think, maybe as much as 45 minutes early in the race on actually a section that was similar to the Cloverleaf. It was like a little embedded mini, like a sprint race, right? There was a little bike section, a little foot section, and a little paddle. And, we had a couple issues there, which largely weren't things that were in our control. So there was a mountain biking loop that was, similar to the one Paula laid out, and that she, Kate and Cliff told us to go ride certain trails, and there were, unmapped flags on them. One of those trails actually had a double loop. So there was like an outer loop and an inner loop. And we rode the outer loop. And I know at least one of the other two teams that were racing against us rode the inner loop, and it happened to be on the inner loop. I think we lost about 15 minutes there. And then there was a foot section on there where, we took a route choice that took us basically to the south end of the map. And we got kind of stuck in a private property. It's like a Polar Springs bottling company.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like on the map or anything. And so we kind of got sucked into that and lost probably 20 to maybe even 30 minutes down there. So, we were operating from behind, and to Brian's point, like the moves that I think were better moves for us were to catch back up. And so there was a mountain bike section after that, and we took a very different route than just about everybody else. I think there were actually a couple teams in the mid pack that did the same thing, but that allowed us to catch up to Untamed New England, I think, basically. And we cut, you know, the lead down to 10 or 15 minutes on Strong Machine, and we're able to catch both teams and pass them on the orienteering loop to head into that pack raft first. So, you know, I think that was actually in some ways our biggest move, because I think it kind of, you know, restored our confidence and got us back kind of to where we would hope to be going into that section. As for your actual question, we looked at the pack raft section, and it's always easier to travel without pack rafts than with them. So our goal was to look to drop the rafts as soon as possible. And we realized that the points actually made a very nice loop if you were willing to get wet, which, as they said, I always like to force my teammates to go swimming. So we just originally actually I had plotted a route that would have included more swimming, but we found that the shoreline was runnable. And when we first got to the water, it looked bigger and darker and scarier and colder than it actually turned out to be. But we chickened out a little bit on the longer swim.
We intended to bring one or two PFDs with us on the trek, because we knew we were going to swim, and in kind of the frenzy of dropping gear, we forgot that. So we wanted to be a little bit more conservative too, just from a safety perspective.
Yeah. Well, it was very interesting, because if the race had been, I was there the day before and there was no shoreline. Yeah, it was very interesting to see how much the water changed, literally in 24 hours. So, for me, it was very interesting, because I was at the finish line standing in the rain, like when Untamed came in, and those guys were in awe of what she did. They're like, I wouldn't do that. so kudos on that. But so, all right, well, we'll close this up, because Brian looks tired. You guys look tired, but got work to do. But so how cool it is it that you guys are in my favorite adventure race picture ever now?
Yeah, we've had a good season with you, Randy. We've seen you at a lot of races.
That the picture of you guys on the bridge, the more I think about it, is my favorite adventure race picture ever now. So wow. At least you got that going.
Yeah, no, we'll take that. That's good. Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Yeah. And, you know, I just want to stress, you know, Brian answered this question earlier, but, I think we actually all felt great when we hit the finish line of that race, just to, you know, end on that happy note. You know, like, it took us a long time to get there. You know, it took us 20 hours to really kind of get to a place where I think we were at peace with being out on the course. And once we got there, we did settle kind of back into our normal groove of things. You know, we weren't necessarily racing with the same gusto that we would normally, but like,
and that is where Brent got his swim in those final hours.
Yeah.
As well.
We got wet. I picked up a leech. It was great. Yeah. I think when we hit the finish line, we were really pleased to be there. You know, happy with the effort. Sometimes the hardest races are the ones you remember the most fondly. I do think this is one which I think we will walk away from feeling, I think, fond memories of it.
I think it's really important for new people, new racers, to hear what this is. I mean, this is adventure racing. You know, that's what happens sometimes. And that I think this is a better, this is a more important finish than if you'd have finished fourth.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say first, because first is always better, but the lessons that not only you learn, but other people are going to learn, is it makes it worth it, I think.
Absolutely.
So, cool. All right. Well, I'll let you go. Oh, one more question. What's your guys' next race? Not that you're putting on, but what are you going to do? Got any plans for like next year?
I've got the Hard Fall coming up in Vermont in a couple weeks. I'm doing that with our teammates, Jim Driscoll and Karen Delaney. I think we'll have a team at Nationals next year, hopefully, if not two. We've got the ITERA, Open Adventure ITERA, five-day race in Scotland in August. So I think some of Nationals, like who we send to Nationals, will depend on the timing because it'll be relatively close. Do we have anything else specifically on the calendar?
No, I mean, we'll probably fill in with some of the usual suspects after that, you know, summer and
maybe the Epic.
Yeah. See what else is going on. I don't know if any of our teammates were directing a 5-day race ourselves next year. So that'll probably limit some of Abby and my racing time in the spring and summer, but we may have a team that lines up for that one as well.
Luckily we race with really good people and they like to get out in the woods too.
Yeah. How about you, Brian? Any big adventures?
I'm taking some time off there. I don't have anything planned this year. I have some personal, summit, you know, high points and such that I'm going to be doing next year, but I'm definitely be racing. I'll be out there. I'll be seeing you and seeing everybody else out there and, trying to, and battling back. Yeah.
Brian's climbing Rainier next year.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
Yeah, a little, as long as I'm in the woods. Yeah, if I'm racing or climbing, it doesn't matter. As long as I'm in the woods, I'm happy.
Perfect. So, okay, well, we'll let everybody get back to real life then. How's that sound?
Thanks, Randy.
As much as we all have real life. All right.
Thanks, Randy. And, you know, it was great to see you so much this year. Have a great fall and winter if we don't see you again, and we'll keep listening.
Cool. Yep. I got one more race and one more, my new sports car racing thing. So I got one or two of those yet too. So
what's the other adventure race you're going to?
The Castlewood.
Okay.
Race. Yeah. None of us are anywhere near St. Louis, but I guess we're all going to be there.
The biggest little race in America, it feels like.
It is. Yeah, it is. Very cool. So, all right. Well, thanks again.
And, thanks, Randy.
Yeah, we'll see you. All right. Bye.
All right. See you later. Bye.